All right, here we go. Open mic time, so grab your refreshment and grab your seat. We're going to start it off here. Thanks again for coming out. We really appreciate it. We really appreciate you sticking around for the open mic. It's always really a special part of every evening for us. And Joan and I both really love it when new people come out to read and join us. So we hope you had a good time tonight and that you'll come back. Maybe you're thinking of reading tonight, but you're not quite there yet. So next time. Anyway, we got some... We got a good list here. So we're going to start it off with Michelle Marr, if she could come up. Michelle, come on up.
Thank you so much. Thank you to Joan and Chris for organizing this. And I've been coming to Hemingway's for years and years now. And I love this venue. I love that it's still going strong. So I'm very, very glad to be part of this community. The first poem that I'm going to read is entitled Crib. Crib. I walk down a faded yellow corridor in what looks like a hospital, all the rooms empty. Turn left, and I'm in a room where a single child stands in a crib, sobbing, head mashed against the railing, a red imprint on her forehead when she lifts her head. She has bangs, light brown hair just below her ears, a white turtleneck patterned with diamonds of red and green polka dots, red corduroys. I know this child. I've seen her picture when she was two or three, standing in front of an apartment building on a windy day, her face blurred, while whirling a large plastic doll in a scatter of leaves. It must have been fall. There was nothing to be done but lift her in my arms, not sure if she'll let me or fight me off, her face hot and wet against my shoulder, feet drumming against my thighs like rain. I'm sorry, I want to say. Sorry there's nothing else I can do or give, breathing in her light scent, shifting her against my chest, rocking back and forth, her heartbeat stumbling against my own. Thank you. The second poem is called Parousia. Parousia comes from the Greek to be present, and it refers to the resurrection of Jesus. But to be present is what we're doing here now, simply being present for each other as part of a community. Parousia. I have walked on the sidewalk and felt it coming in the wind. I have walked to the top of trees and seen over them the blue curve of earth. I have stood in a swimming pool and looked down at the wavy image of my feet as if I were peering through all the years of my life. The beauty of those years, unbearable. Even the most painful moments somehow nullified. For a moment, I could stare through the water and watch events unfold that caused me such pain and not feel anguish. But what if resurrection comes and I'm still me? What if what we know is eternal is inside of us already? A starless darkness we cannot escape. I want delivered from the flares of loneliness that burn through my days. How do we bear it? Why don't we just fly up and never return? Once as I lay with my face buried in my pillow, I saw a sphere out of the corner of my eye, warm and pulsing, pitted and brown like a peach pit. It was eternity. Radiating bliss. If I'd had the chance, I'd have leapt into it instantly and left all I'd loved behind. Dear ones, I'm sorry. I couldn't stay. Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle. Next up, this is exciting, Jennifer Krar. Jen.
Thank you, Joan and Chris, for this space, to this opportunity. First of all, I have to tell you, you are not my audience. I write for 8 to 12-year-olds. I'm working on a novel about Zoe, who is a competitive swimmer, trying to meet the expectations of her Olympic-caliber mother, who is a coach, and who meets Atalanta, the Greek god hero, not heroine. So, but my poem is for adults. That was just my shtick. Chasing Atalanta, it's not easy. Chasing a mythical huntress who's faster than the wind. I, a mere mortal, worn with age, am slow. Move slow. I first heard Atalanta's story on a cassette and was instantly captured. I listened to how she was abandoned by her father, the king, because she wasn't a boy. How hunters found her and caught her skills. She loved her life running free through the woods. All this ended when the king summoned her to the kingdom, demanding she marry so her husband could rule the land. I loved how she called the shots and agreed to marry only if a suitor could beat her at a foot race. The wheels of the cassette turned and turned. I listened to her story again and again so I could make it my own and tell it to my students. I wanted to tell a tale about a female hero who was beautiful and strong. There was the problem of the golden apples. Magic ruined my message. With the help of Aphrodite, goddess of love, and the three distracting apples she threw in the mix, Hippomenes tricked Atalanta to win the race, win her hand, and win the land. I spun my story to suit my message. Hippomenes was different, I told my students. Atalanta chose him, I insisted. She wanted to lose. She let herself be distracted by the golden apples. She still ran free after they married. For 20 years, I told Atalanta's story this way. Now, I am chasing Atalanta again, digging deeper, trying to uncover her true nature, to tell the world. But as soon as I grab hold of the story, it blows away in the wind. I wake in the night, heart pounding, limbs twitching, shaking, and sweating. I twist in the damp sheets and wonder if I've set myself an impossible task. I might never catch Atalanta. I'm a mere mortal running out of time.
Thank you, Jen. Our next reader at the open mic. So I used to work at a bookstore that will remain nameless for this evening's purposes. And this next gent was one of my all-time favorite customers. He would come in almost daily and never once caused any trouble. Never once. I mean, he's mischievous, but he never trashed the place, which was cool. Mark Pazanza.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for that high compliment. I'll cherish those words. Oh, near the mic. Sorry. Thank you. So yes, I too would like to thank the organizers and the Hemingway Poetry Series for this great opportunity. I'm going to read one poem because it's on the longer side of short, and it's about the peculiar experience of having people come up to me and say, I know who you are, but it turns out they don't. It's called Double Take. I've often had run-ins with people who think they know who I am. They're sure of it, sidewalk, grocery aisle, checkout, even restaurant and bar. They approach with confidence and greet my celebrity double. I know you. You're that reporter on Fox News. What's his name? Geraldo something. Rivera, that's it. No, that's not me, I say. Are you sure, is the response. I nod my head, secure in the proof of my driver's license. Hey, it's you. You're the guy who does the movie reviews on the Today Show. No, that's not me, I say. Are you sure, is the response. Yes, I'm sure. Gene Shalit is somewhere in New Jersey. Well, you could be him. Thanks, I say, and ponder the physics of me being another me in a parallel universe. Disappointment always lingers. Then there are my distinguished doubles of the past. Once, while I was drinking my beer, a man approached and, with his fingers cocked like a gun, said, "You look like Bartolomeo Fancetti. Lucky for you, you're not frying in the electric chair." No, I say, I'm the spirit of Niccolo Sacco trying to drink a beer. It'll be our little secret. And of course, there's Friedrich Nietzsche. That ID comes up in the halls of learning. Did anyone ever tell you you look like Nietzsche, the famous philosopher? That last phrase is a footnote for my benefit. There's definitely a resemblance. Purely hirsute, I say, on my best academic behavior. Nothing in common between us except philology and the gods of Wissenschaft. The elevator doors open and the atmosphere improves. At a conference in San Diego, a hand slapped my back and a voice shouted, "Emiliano, Emiliano Zapata, back from the dead to lead another revolution. Where's your bandolier, brother? Be on the lookout for assassins. You're a wanted man." Just then, a photograph of Zapata's bloodied corpse flashed before my eyes, and I checked my driver's license just to make sure. Long have I daydreamed that someone would come up to me and say, "It's you, you're Morgan Freeman." Or, "Jet Li, what are you doing here?" But I can't see that happening anytime soon. The eyes are so literal in the face of what they see. One day, when I was walking on Fifth Avenue, doing the usual scribbledy-dibbledy in my brain, someone stopped me and said, "Hey, you're that poetry guy. I saw you at a reading, but I didn't buy your book." "No," I answered, "it wasn't me." "You're right," he said. "You don't look like a poet. That other guy, you could tell, was the real thing." Thank you.
So sometimes I would decide I needed to have a coffee real bad, so I would just leave that guy in charge of the bookshop while I went and took care of that. Next up, Rebecca Young.
Out, you guys are still doing it. Thank you. Okay, let's see. I grew up overseas There we go. Thank you very much. Is this okay? Okay. I grew up overseas. I moved 8 times in 10 years, continent to continent, country to country, all over the place, and not the United States. My dad wanted us to pick up the customs of each country we lived in, which was a little tiring after a while. Anyway, he taught us to curtsy, my two sisters and I, which I don't think anybody does anymore, except in front of the queen or the king. Anyway, this is very short. How to curtsy: stand straight, face the adult, bend your right leg and place it behind the knee of your left leg. Touch the ground with the toe of your right foot. Bend both knees and dip. Curtsying, American style. Every home leave, my dad insisted we curtsy, especially to Pastor Ruth and the members of the Zion Lutheran Church, where my father gave slide presentations about our family's life in Africa every time we came back to the States. And every home leave, we curtsied. It shows you have class, my dad said. It shows we can act like trained monkeys on display, my sister Leslie said. Okay, and I have one more poem. Weeds. It's a fine thing, this rainbow of mourning I wear for you. The hue of dust and rusted gems. The texture of grasses flattened by stems of slick silver sheets of rain on soil. The shimmer of fireflies over a sea of blue-eyed grass and hairy hawkweed. Here I sit, waiting. See how I wear this bitter taffeta that rustles with your laughter? See how I'm adorned in everlasting patience? Watch the folds of your ink-stained hands, your wiry red hair that enfold me. Who would have thought I had such capacity for waiting? Here I sit, splendid, adorned, my marble heart, my palms. Thank you very, very much. Thank you. Thank you. It was about an old boyfriend.
Thank you. Thank you, Rebecca. Next up is our last reader. What to say? What to say? This almost never happens. Joan Bauer is going to read tonight.
Jill, you're right. It's really hard to see anything up here. And I mean, I don't know if I can do this. I'm reading a poem called Procession in honor of Father's Day from Joseph's book, Beyond Waking. And there are copies. I've got some copies here and for if you'd like to take one home. And I'll have some for all the future weeks. And he was real lucky. He had two books published in 2009, Beyond Waking and Love the 10,000 Things. And Jan Beatty, I'll have to tell this story. I just have to tell it. Jan Beatty helped him a lot with this. And they sat on a park bench in Highland Park for a number of days and going through the poems. And she finally, said, I don't think, and he had said, I wonder if there's a book in here somewhere. And she, after reading them, she said, I think, Joseph, there are two books here. There are two books. And then she rescued a poem that was like in his satchel. She went through a satchel. And she said, what's that? What's that? She pulled it out. And I think it was Childhood Song. She was really, she's a great editor, as many of you know. But it was a tremendous gift. because he'd been a music teacher, a composer, an actor. He'd done a lot of things. Let me see we can do this here. All right. Procession. Every so many years, somebody's daddy gets into his car on a midsummer day and heads west into the late sun and beyond to early night. And because the winds have come, he keeps on driving, barely noticing the fallen boughs. And when the mountain road narrows, slams the brakes to a sudden stop, slumps down against the wheel, his wire-haired brows beating down hard on his lids in the blind, dull roar, watching the procession of fathers and of their fathers as they come to remember. Yes, of course, soon, he mutters, the beast rearing up, set loose among crowds, drugged, horns shaved, plunging into a long sleep. Only the wild trees, the hollow ground, the hollow sound of rain on the roof, a hand, a palm, fingers on the other side spread against the moon. He can't be far from Denver, maybe. Thank you. Thank you. See you in 2 weeks.